Om sahana vavatu sahanau bhunaktu sahavirjam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Good. Welcome back. We've begun the middle third of our text, Shruti Sara Samudharana. And in the middle third, our attention shifts to the Mahavakya. We've talked about this for a couple of weeks now, so just to summarize all that very quickly, Mahavakya is Vedanta. Vedanta can be summarized as Tattvam. Let's see. Everything else is auxiliary. Everything else is for the sake of Tattvam. Let's see. Including Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. So we redefine Shravana in a very precise way as saying Shravana is for the sake of removing this pramana asambhavana, any confusion with regard to the scripture. And Manana, for the sake of prameya asambhavana, removing any confusion with regard to your true nature. And finally, Nididhyasana, for the sake of removing viparita bhavana, any habitual wrong thinking. We've discussed all this in some length. The point of all of that is that Mahavakya is everything, which means if you want to get it, if you want to pick a fight, argue about the Mahavakya. And that's what we're seeing here in the middle third. The student introduces four possible arguments against the validity of the Mahavakya. The student has these doubts. Of course, the student, it's normal for students to have doubts, and it's wonderful that students can bring their doubts to the guru to have their doubts cleared. So let's just review very quickly what are those four doubts raised by the student. First one is that tattvamasi is meant as upasana, meditation. And remember, the context of this was this argument comes from the karma mimamsakas, those who follow the rituals of the Vedas, and they would argue that the Mahavakya introduces a special kind of meditation that's meant to be done along with the rituals to increase the efficacy of those rituals. If you'll pardon the expression, to supercharge those rituals with extra results. That's the purpose of the meditation. So meditation is an adjunct to the rituals, and tattvamasi is one such meditation. The next was that it's a figurative usage. So tattvamasi means you are Brahman, and maybe it's meant figuratively. Like the example, what was the example we saw? Ishvara Gupta is a lion. A lion among men. So maybe to call you Brahman is to make you feel good. And similarly, that's similar to the third argument, which is it's praise, stuti. So just as, what was the example we saw? Yeah, you might praise someone by saying you're virtually an Indra, a king of the gods. So you are Brahman. So just plain praise. And then the fourth of the arguments is a reversal of the Mahavakya, which is to say, Tvam Tadasi, Tat Asti. The nature of you is Brahman. Flips the Mahavakya around. So tattvamasi means the nature of Brahman is you, but suppose we flip it around. The grammar might support that. And I made asti because it's in the third person. We can't say asi if we flip it around like that. So the nature of you, your limitations, your whatever it is, that is Brahman. So these are the four arguments introduced by the student. They're going to be dealt with at length in this middle third of the text. And the guru began, we saw verse 55 in the last class, where the guru begins to address the first of these, which probably is perhaps the most significant of them, I would say. So he says in the third line, Ataha eva na drishti vidhana param. The Mahavakya is not drishti vidhana param. Drishti here means meditation. It's literally seeing, but in this context, it's referring to meditation. Drishti vidhana. Vidhana or vidhi both mean injunctions. So drishti vidhana or drishti vidhi means an injunction for meditation. And injunction is crucial here because all the rituals are given in forms of injunctions. You should do this ritual, you should do that ritual, you should do that ritual. And then one more injunction comes along. And in addition to doing all those rituals, you should meditate on Tattvamasi. So that is drishti vidhana, that is the injunction to do meditation. So he says, na. Drishti vidhana param, the Mahavakya is not in nature an injunction to do meditation. So the guru introduces his reply with that statement, and now he's going to explain why the Mahavakya is not enjoined by the Vedas for the sake of meditation. That statement, enjoined by the Vedas, please remember from, I think, our discussion, either in the last class or the class prior to that, is that the vast majority of the Vedas is in the form of injunctions. There are more, injunctions mean do this, do this, do this, do this. There are more injunctions in the Vedas than any other kind of statement. So someone who's really engaged in Vedic study is likely to come to the conclusion that the entire Vedas are vidhipara, vidhanapara. The Vedas are concerned with telling us what to do. Some scriptures are, and portions of the Vedas certainly are. But here we need to distinguish, and this is what the guru is going to make it clear to the student, that even though much of the Vedas is focused on telling you what to do, vidhi vidhana para, so focusing on injunctions, the Mahavakya is not a vidhi. It's not an injunction. Why? Iti shabda shiraska padokta matir. Iti shabda shiraska parokta vihita manahari shutar vachanaihi. Vihita manahari shutar vachanai. Navidhanami hasti tata vachane. Navidhanami hasti tata vachane. Suvilakshanametarato vachanat. Suvilakshanametaramato vachanat. It's nice. In one verse, he summarizes a really complicated argument that's found in the Brahma Sutras. So we're getting the light version of the Brahma Sutras here. So he says, start in the end of the, to make sense out of this, we have to put words in some kind of order. I'll start in the end of the second line. Taihi vachanaihi, by those statements, by those injunctions. So he's going to be dismissing the injunctions. Taihi vachanaihi, by those statements which are in the form of injunctions, do this, do this, do this. Injunctions, what kind of injunctions? Mana adishu, with regard to the mind, and I'm going to explain that a little bit later. So injunctions with regard to the mind, etc., vihita, are made. Those injunctions are made. How are they made? Those injunctions are made in a certain, there's a style, a style of Sanskrit language used in the formation of those vidhis, which he explains in the first line. Iti shabda shiraska pada ukta matihi. One long compound word. So pada ukta matihi, that there is the statement of a particular word, which is shiraska, here at the end of the statement, and that word is iti shabda, the word iti. So he says that injunctions, I'll paraphrase those first two lines, and we'll leave out that mana adi for just a moment. So paraphrasing the first two lines, injunctions are made by the Vedas, making use of an expression that ends in the word iti. Now, you have to know quite a bit of grammar and syntax to follow all of this, but many, most of you, I think, have studied the Taittiriya Upanishad in the very beginning. Listen to this, and listen for the iti. Bhuriti vaha yam lokaha. Bhuhu iti vai ayam lokaha. Ayam lokaha, this world, bhuhu iti. Then, bhuvaha, bhuvaritjantariksham. Bhuvaha iti, notice the iti is, antariksham, the space in between the earth and the heavens. Bhuvaha iti. What are this bhuhu, bhuvaha, and then suvaritya saulokaha, asaulokaha, the heavens, suvaha iti. And then finally, mahayatya. Oh, where am I? Yeah. Mahayatya adityaha, adityaha, sun, maha iti. Look at that. Bhuvaha iti, I'm sorry, bhuhu iti, bhuvaha iti, suvaha iti, maha iti. This is the Taittiriya Upanishad giving you meditation instructions. And how do the meditation instructions work? So it says that ayam lokaha, this earthly realm, bhuhu iti, you should meditate on it as bhuhu. Bhuhu iti. Meditate on this world as bhuhu. Bhuvaha iti antariksham. Meditate on the interregion as being bhuvaha. Suvaha iti asaulokaha. The heavenly realm. Meditate on suvaha iti. Meditate on it as suvaha. And finally, mahitya adityaha adityaha, the sun. Meditate on the sun, maha iti, as maha, as these four syllables he calls, they're called four vyakritis. Now I'm just pointing this out to show you a convention in Sanskrit language. And that is, if you want to say, meditate on A as being B, the way you say it in Sanskrit is B iti. Meditate on A as being B. B, iti. So the introduction of the word iti declares what is to be meditated on. And the example he gives is actually not from the Taittiriya Upanishad. It's from the Chandogya Upanishad. He gives the example, mana adishu. So this is a different example, little harder to understand. So that's why I gave the simple example first. So in the Chandogya, if you want to look this up, this is 3:17:8. You can look it up. He says, Manaha Brahma iti upasita. Manaha, the mind. Brahma iti, as Brahman, upasita. You should meditate. You should meditate on the mind as Brahman. Iti adhyatmam. This is a meditation from the atma, from the self standpoint. Ata adhidhaivatam, and now from the standpoint of the gods, akashaha Brahma iti. Akasha upasita, you have to bring the word in, Brahma iti. You should meditate on space as Brahman. First, you should meditate on the mind as Brahman. Then he says you should meditate on space as Brahman, using the word iti both times to indicate what you're supposed to meditate upon. Brahma iti. Manaha Brahma iti upasita. The mind is to be meditated on as Brahman. Okay, you get the idea. The use of the word iti shows you what you're supposed to meditate on. So if tattvamasi is an injunction for meditation, then tattvamasi should include the word iti. Should be tat iti tvam upasita. This is following the style. Tat iti, as tat, tvam upasita. You should meditate. Actually, that's not the right. I have a little grammatical problem there if you don't care about it. So you should meditate on tvam, yourself, as being tat, as being Brahman. But that's not what it says. There's no iti there in the Mahavakya at all. So this is his first argument for the Mahavakya not being an injunction. All of the Vedas, wherever you see injunctions, you see that iti shabda. So what is he saying here? Iti shabda shiraska pada ukta matihi vihita. Taihi vachanaihi. Taihi vachanaihi, by the injunctions of the Vedas, vihita, what is enjoined. What is enjoined is iti shabda shiraska. It ends in the word iti. Whenever an injunction is made, it ends in the word iti. Mana adishu, for example, mana brahma iti upasita. So that mana adishu is a reference to the Chandogya Upanishad. Maybe we can turn the heat down. So then, yeah, you can just turn that heat down. That's right. Thank you. So then he says, na tata, you see that tata? You have to make the na join the tata. Na tata vachane. But it is not so, na tata vachane, in the Mahavakya. It is not the same in the Mahavakya. Vidhanam iha asti. There is no iha here, vachane, in the Mahavakya. Na vidhanam asti. There is no injunction. There is no injunction here in the Mahavakya. Why? There's no word iti. Therefore, you see the in the middle of the last line, ataha, therefore, suvilakshanam etat. Therefore, etat vachanam. This statement, this Mahavakya, is suvilakshanam. Utterly different. Vilakshana means different. Suvilakshana, completely different. Vachanat, from that statement in the Chandogya Upanishad or any other Vidhivakya, that the Mahavakya is utterly unlike other injunctions. other injunctions, making use of the word iti. Now, we're done with the verse. Let me just make a quick comment here. You may be feeling, as I felt when I started studying all this, I don't have that question or doubt. I don't worry about itties. Well, here he's addressing, really to understand any scripture, we have to put ourselves back into the time and place at which it was written. So this is written at the time of Shankara. This is written some 1,200 years ago, at a time when the authority of the Vedas reigned supreme. There was so much focus on, even then, so much ritualism at that time. And along with the ritualism came all this focus on Vedic injunctions. So it may not be your doubt, but it was a very common doubt at this time and place. And that's why it figures largely in here. Then if it's not your doubt, why are we going through this? Well, this is how manana works. Manana works by introducing doubts, even doubts that you don't have, and then dismissing them. And if you question, what is the value of dismissing doubts that I don't have? There's a value. And it took me years to discover that value. And what the value is this. After you have seen Vedanta dismiss doubt after doubt after doubt, doubts that you have and doubts that you've never entertained at all, after you've seen Vedanta so skillfully eliminate, negate all those doubts, you come to understand there is no argument against Vedanta that cannot be negated by Vedanta. It establishes the strength of Vedantic teachings to meet and dismiss any possible doubt. So I'm making a little sales pitch here because some of you are feeling, and this is a very pedantic kind of doubt. Only people who know Sanskrit and study the Vedas are going to have this doubt. But by seeing these doubts dismissed, your own dridhata, firmness in these teachings, is increased through dismissing these doubts. Okay, enough said. He proceeds. Manaso viyata savitra prabhrtehe, manaso viyata savitra prabhrte, pravadanti natani sadatmakatam, pravadanti natani sadatmakatam, manaharihi mukhyamupasyataya, manaharihi mukhyamupasyataya, pravadanti yatokshara drishti yutam, vadanti yatokshara. So there are many vidhis in the Vedas to meditate on manasaha with regard to the mind, viyataha with regard to space, viyat, and savitra, you know that word, sun, prabhrtehe, etc. So all of these injunctions with regard to the mind, with regard to space, with regard to savitra, specifically, manaha brahma iti upasita, meditate on the mind as Brahman, and then I gotta get the grammar right. Viyat brahma iti upasita, meditate on space as being Brahman, and then savita brahma iti upasita, meditate on the sun as being Brahman. All these statements can be found in the Vedas. But now he makes a point here. Na vadanti, tani, those Vedic injunctions, na pravaranti, they do not say that the mind, space, and sun have sadatmakatam. Sat atmaka, having the nature of sat, and sat means Brahman. Sadatmakatam, Brahmanness. What an odd word. So when the Vedas are giving these injunctions, meditate on the mind as Brahman, space as Brahman, sun as Brahman, he says those statements do not attribute Brahmanness to the mind, to space, and to sun. They are not statements of attribution. A statement of attribution is A equals B. It's a statement of attribution. Like tat equals tvam. A equals B. So when you make a statement A equals B, B is attributed or predicated to A. When you say tat is tvam, you're attributing the nature of tat, Brahman, is attributed to tvam, you. But he says these injunctions do not attribute the nature of Brahman to the mind, to space, to sun, or anything else. So he's concluding the prior argument about how tattvamasi is not an injunction. Tattvamasi is a statement of attribution. Tat is tvam, which means the attributes of tat are attributed to tvam. That's how the Mahavakya works, right? In fact, maybe in the second half I'll talk about that a little bit more. Not sure how much we want to get into this. These arguments can be really involved, and we'll try to find a middle ground. I don't want to gloss over things, but I don't want to kind of bore you to death either. We'll go for the middle ground. So, first half says that those injunctions do not attribute Brahmanness. When you say meditate on the mind or space or sun as being Brahman, such statements do not attribute Brahmanness to mind, space, and sun, unlike the Mahavakya, which absolutely does attribute Brahmanness to tvam. Then he concludes, mana adihi mukhyam upasyataya pravaranti. Pravaranti, those statements, those injunctions, pravaranti, they say mana adi, with regard to the mind, space, and sun, the mind, space, and sun are upasyataya, are to be meditated upon, mukhyam upasyataya. They're to be meditated upon in the mukhyam, we used that word before, the primary meaning. You are to meditate, when the statement, Chandogya Upanishad says, meditate on the mind as Brahman, it says you're supposed to use the primary meaning of mind for the sake of meditation. In other words, don't get all mystical on us. Mind means mind. Space means space. Sun means space. Sun means Brahman. Sun means sun, sorry. So meditate on the mind itself as Brahman. Meditate on space itself. Meditate on sun itself as Brahman. Don't use any secondary meanings for those words. Now, at this point, you'll be, what is the significance of that? The significance of that is when you peel apart the Mahavakya and realize that the Mahavakya does not use the mukhya artha. I used that word in the last class. Primary meaning. The Mahavakya does not use primary meanings in revealing its intent. The injunctions do use primary meanings. Sun is sun. Space is space. Mind is mind. But when the Mahavakya says Tvam, does it mean the primary meaning of Tvam? The primary meaning of Tvam is a person sitting on your chair. That's mukhya. That is the mukhyartha. The primary meaning of Tvam is a person sitting on your chair. Tat asi. The person sitting on your chair is Brahman? Huh? That doesn't make any sense. And that's not what the Mahavakya says. The Mahavakya does not say that the individual person, having body, mind, and senses, sitting on your chair, the Mahavakya does not say that that individual person is Brahman. That would be the mukhyartha. So notice that the vidhi statements use that primary meaning. Mind means mind. Space means space. Sun means sun. Tvam doesn't mean tvam. The primary meaning of tvam is the one sitting on your chair. The implied meaning. We gave in a primary class mukhyartha and gaunartha. Now we have to give you one more. Sorry, if we're going to use this language, we have to get the words right. So in a prior class, I gave you the words mukhya artha, primary meaning, and gauna artha, secondary meaning. Now we're going to use a third one, which is lakshya artha. Implied meaning. There's a primary meaning, mukhyartha. There's a secondary meaning, gaunartha. If you call that Ishwaragupta a lion, that's not mukhyartha, right? So that's gaunartha. When you say meditate on mind as Brahman, use the mukhyartha of mind. The mind that you experience, you're supposed to meditate on Brahman. If you're calling Ishwaragupta a lion, you're using the gaunartha. But when you're using the Mahavakya, tattvamasi, you're supposed to use the lakshyartha, the implied meaning. And we could spend several classes talking about this. We're not going to. Those of you who attended the classes on our Laghu Vakya Vritti, we went into it in great detail, and you can go and listen to those lectures online, and you get this whole discussion of what are the lakshanas and how does that lakshana vakya work. All of that comes in Laghu Vakya Vritti. So I don't think we need to get into that discussion here. It's also not really discussed right up in so many words. It's hinted at, but anyway, you can go read that for yourself or learn that on your own. We've studied it before. So here, the point is that when an injunction is used, you're using the mukhyartha, the primary meaning, but the Mahavakya uses the lakshyartha because tvam refers to the person sitting on your seat. That's the mukhyartha. The mukhyartha of tat is really Ishvara, the creator, sustainer, destroyer of the universe. So if you say, how can the creator, sustainer, destroyer of the universe be sitting on my chair? Well, you're stuck on the mukhyartha. That's not what the Mahavakya means. Nor is it gaunartha, like Ishwaragupta's line. It is lakshyartha, which means you have to use the implied meanings of both tat and tvam. And that's what is dealt with in so much detail in that Laghu Vakya Vritti. But just to summarize that whole thing, the implied meaning of tvam is the essence of the person sitting in your chair. What is the essence of the person sitting in your chair? Consciousness, Satchidananda Atma. So the mukhyartha is the person sitting in your chair. The lakshyartha is Satchidananda Atma. Then, what about tat? The mukhyartha is Ishvara, creator, sustainer, destroyer. The lakshyartha is the essence of Ishvara. Ishvara has, just like you have a true nature, Ishvara also has a true nature. Your true nature is pure consciousness. Ishvara's nature is? Same pure consciousness. We use different language. We can say that your true nature is Satchidananda. We can say Ishvara's true nature is Satyam Jnanam Anantam. But they're just different words. They mean exactly the same thing. And this is exactly how the Mahavakya reveals its intended meaning. By giving up the mukhyartha, the primary meanings of tat and tvam, and by going for the lakshyartha, the implied meanings of tat and tvam, you discover the identity. And the identity is, simply put, the truth because of which you exist and the truth because of which Ishvara exists is one and the same. The reality of you is the reality of Ishvara. Or other way around, reality of Ishvara is identical to the reality because of which Ishvara exists is identical to the reality because of which you exist. That's the Mahavakya. And that's not so esoteric, is it? You can get it. The reality because of which Ishvara exists is identical to the reality because of which you exist. So notice then, and his point is that unlike these vidhis, these injunctions which use the primary meanings of the words like mind, space, and sun, here in the Mahavakya, you do not use the primary meanings. You use the implied meaning, the lakshyartha. Yataha aksharadrishti yutam. Let me connect that properly here. That's part of that. It's all one statement. So it says that the mukhyam, the primary meaning of mana adi, of mind, space, and sun, upasitaya, as an object of meditation, it's to be meditated upon how it by being akshara drishti yutam. The mind, the mukhyam mana adi, the primary sense of mind, space, and sun, are to be yutam combined with akshara drishti. Akshara here means Brahman. Akshara drishti means, and drishti means meditation. So akshara drishti means meditation on Brahman. So the primary meaning of mind, space, and sun are to be yutam, connected with akshara drishti, meditation on Brahman. So you are to meditate on the primary meanings of mind, space, and sun, unlike, and here he's making the opposite case. He's showing why Mahavakya cannot be a drishti, cannot be a vidhi vakya, cannot be an injunction. Injunctions use the primary sense of words for the sake of meditation, as opposed to the mahavakya, which uses not the primary meaning, but the implied meaning. Not the mukhyartha, but the lakshyartha. Okay. Next two verses go together. I hope we can fit them in together. Think so. Vikratit tvam avadi mana prabhrater. Vikratit tvam avadi mana bahusha shruti shu prakritestum sataha. Bahusha shruti shu prakritestum sataha. Ata heva samhana vibhaktitaya. Ata heva samhani vibhakti. Manahari suvedyam asatyamiti. Manahari suvedyam. We're going to get a little bit more grammatical analysis here. So why? Remember, tattvam asi is central. So we better understand the grammar. When the scripture says tattvamasi, we had better understand it grammatically and syntactically. And here we're going to get a reference to the syntax, and you'll see what I mean about that in just a moment. He makes a grammatical reference, not actually a reference to the syntax of the Sanskrit language. So he begins. Vikritvam. Vikriti, change, modification. Modification. Vikritvam, the status of being a modification. The status of being a modification. What has that status of being a modification? Mana prabhrtehi. Means the same as mana adi, mana etc. By the way, just you can learn a little bit of Sanskrit here. The word adi often means etc., and the word prabhriti also means etc. And in the genitive case, adi becomes adehi, and here prabhriti becomes prabhritehi. So, for the mind, etc., the mind, etc., possesses vikritvam. It possesses modification. And it's... We have all these awkward statements in Sanskrit because Sanskrit doesn't have the verb to have. And in English, we use that word to have a lot. So it's easier if I just translate it with the English verb to have. And we'll start off by saying, the mind, etc., has modificationness. Eek. I'm making a mess of it. That's what it says. So now we need to understand it. So the mind is a modification. A modification of what? Go down into the second line and sataha. The mind is a modification of sat. Sat means Brahman in this context. The mind is a modification of Brahman. And this, avadi, is taught bahushaha, again and again, shruti shru, in the scriptures. It is taught, let me see what to do, prakritehi. I'm just trying to get a connection here. It's not coming. The meaning is clear, but a certain grammatical connection is not coming. It won't detract. The mind, etc., is a modification of Brahman. Therefore, it is Prakriti. It is a Prakriti itself. It's a modification of, mana prabhrittehi prakritehi. There's a connection I'm missing. The mind, etc., and all of creation is a modification of Brahman. This avadi is taught bahushaha shutishu in many places in the scriptures, that the mind, that the entire creation, including the mind, it is all a modification of Brahman. Now, the point that's going, when we say modification of Brahman, we recognize that something cannot exist without an underlying reality. So our stock example is the pot cannot exist without an underlying reality, which is clay. So therefore we say the pot is a modification of clay. That's the language used here. The pot is a vikriti. It is a modification of its underlying reality, which is clay. And just as the pot is a modification of clay, the entire cosmos is a modification of Brahman. What's really cool about this metaphor, this kind of modification, when the clay was modified to become pot, what happened to the clay? Clay has no form. What happened to clay? Nothing. Clay remains clay, unchanged. Without undergoing any real change, there is an apparent change through which unchangeable clay is changed into pot. Apparently changed. That word apparent is key, because that's our word mithya. The word mithya is crucial in this verse. So there is the word vikriti here, meaning change, better to translate it as apparent change. Of course, he doesn't say that, but he assumes, he meaning Totakacharya, assumes, if you're studying this text, you're obviously not a beginner, so you understand that the change he's talking about is not a real change, but an apparent change. There's no real change for the clay. It's an apparent change. There's no real change for Brahman. It's an apparent change. So, this is taught again and again in the scripture, Shrutishu. Ataha eva, and therefore, here comes our Sanskrit, samana vibhaktitaya mana adi suvedyam asatyam iti. So therefore, mana adi, the mind, etc., which means the entire universe, including mind, all of it, suvedyam, is very easily understood as being asatyam. And asatyam here does not mean non-existent or unreal. Asatyam here means mithya. So we have to really tune in to the Vedantic teachings to get the correct meaning of these verses. So the mind, etc., is clearly understood to be mithya, based on something he calls samana vibhakti, having the same vibhakti. Vibhakti is a grammatical term. In English, we call it declension. And I'm not going to teach you Sanskrit. Don't worry. then I will bore you to death. I promise you, I won't do that. But this samana vibhakti, more commonly, let me just get these. These terms. So vibhakti means grammatical case, declension. Samana means same. And a more common term is actually samana adhikarana, which means having the same case. And I'm going to spare you all the grammar and say all it means is that. Same. Having the same grammatical status. That's what these both mean. Samana vibhakti, samana adhikarana. They both mean having the same grammatical status, and that is demonstrated by the simple equation, A equals B. And he says, since they have the same grammatical status, therefore, it's easy to know that the mind and the entire universe is mithya. What is his argument? It's a little obscure, and I admit it's obscure. In fact, it becomes more clear in the commentary. So where the commentator says, manasaha sadrupa brahma karyatvam abhani. It is abhani, the scripture reveals manasaha sadrupa brahma karyatvam. The mind is a product, karya. Let me do it like this. Correct? Absolutely correct, right? Pot is clay. Turn it around. Clay is pot? That's not true. Clay is not pot. Pot is clay. Clay is not pot. I still remember Pooja Swamiji saying again and again, A is B, B is not A. A is B, B is not A. I don't know how many times he said that. A is B, B is not A. A is B, B is not A. I really got it. Pot is clay. Clay is not pot. And this is a statement. By the way, there's a lot of logic here, which we're not going to get into. But what he's saying is the karya, the effect, is made of the karana, the cause. The effect is the cause. The cause is not the effect. That's the logic behind it. When you say pot is clay, what are you saying? Pot is the effect, karya. And pot is nothing but clay, karana. You can't turn it around, but this is a true statement. So here the statement is, I'm not really writing clearly. This is a statement that equates that the karya, the effect, is the karana, the cause, but the cause is not the effect. Effect equals cause. Let me do that. Effect equals cause. But again, you cannot turn these equations around. The effect is the cause. The cause is not the effect. Now, what is the context here? Why is he saying that all these scriptural statements, what is he saying here? He says that all these statements about the mind, etc., being modifications. There we go. The mind is a modification. So what is a statement? In fact, that's the statement. The mind is Brahman. Just like pot is clay, just like effect is non-different from its cause, In the same way, mind is Brahman. Mind is a vikara, a modification of Brahman. Pot is a modification of clay, and of any effect, karya, is a modification of the cause, karana. And here in this expression, by the way, this goes back to the Chandogya. Mana brahma iti upasita. So we're getting this equation of mind and Brahman. And the point he's making is whenever you see this equation reveals the mind to be an effect of Brahman. He uses the word vikriti, a modification of Brahman. And that which is a modification is mithya. So this is his point here, that the mind is a modification of Brahman. Now the point is concluded in the next verse. So we're just going to move on to the next verse so we can get the whole idea. The whole idea is expressed in these pair of verses. So in this verse, in the prior verse, we got the idea that the mind is understood to be mithya because the mind is a modification of Brahman revealed through this samana vibhakti, this equation. Manas equals Brahma. Then in the next verse. Janitat. Tvamavarinahi shrutibhir janitat tvamavarinahi shruti janakena satasya sharira bhrataha janakena satasya sharira manahari vikara vilakshanatam manahari vikara vilakshanatam pratiyanti sharira Bhrtastu tataha pranayanti sharira bhrtastu tataha. The prior verse said that the mind and the entire creation are modifications, products of Brahman. Fine. What about Atma? What about consciousness? If everything else is a modification of Brahman, then consciousness should... If everything is a modification of Brahman, then consciousness should be a modification of Brahman. And that sort of sounds okay, except for the fact that we just got done saying anything that's a modification is mithya. So if you say that Satchidananda Atma is a modification of Brahman, in American English, chip off the old block. By the way, this is a doctrine that's found in Vishishta Dvaita. This is Vishishta Dvaita. This is how they argue. And that is that the individual consciousness is a little piece of the whole consciousness, a modification of that whole. So this is actually addressing that Vishishta Dvaita doctrine. We need not get into it in detail. But here is argument. He wants to contrast that the world and mind, all of that exists, is a product of Brahman, a modification of Brahman, and therefore is mithya, unlike consciousness, which is not, I'll just give you the bottom line, then we'll see it. Unlike consciousness, this is what's taught in this last verse, consciousness is not a modification of Brahman. Consciousness is Brahman. Not a modification. Absolute identity. And how does he reveal that? Well, how does he state that here? He says, prior verse, he said that in many places the scriptures say that the mind, etc., is a modification of Brahman. But he says here, na avadi shuti bihi, but the scriptures do not say that asya Asya Sharira Bhritaha. He likes that term. Sharira Bhrit. The one who holds a body. The one who bears a body, we say the embodied consciousness. Sharira Bhrit, the one who bears the body, means what? Embodied consciousness. Asya Sharira Bhritaha, for embodied consciousness, na avadi shutibihi, the scriptures do not say that embodied consciousness has janitatvam, status of being created, being a product, being a modification. The scriptures say again and again that the entire universe, along with the mind, is a modification or effect or product of Brahman. But he says here that the scriptures never say that asya sharira bhritaha, for the embodied consciousness, there is no janitatvam, there is no status of being created. The scripture never says that that embodied consciousness was created by what? Janakena, by a creator. What is a creator? Sata, by Sat. Again, what does Sat mean here? Brahman. So the scriptures do not say anywhere that consciousness was created by Brahman. So notice the contrast he makes. Everything else is a product of Brahman, a modification of Brahman. Consciousness is not a modification of Brahman, not a product of Brahman. Again, this is the argument of our Vishishta Dvaita friends. They say they love the metaphor of sparks emanating from a fire. So every spark has the same nature as fire, but every spark is just a tiny spark. Just a little tiny spark, unlike the big roaring fire. So this is how they describe, just as there are these little tiny sparks that come from this huge shining fire, in the same way we are tiny little sparks of consciousness emanating from the glorious Brahman. And it's, on the surface it sounds okay, but several problems. One is, tiny little spark? Ananda, full, complete, vast, limitless, not a tiny little spark. And secondly, that which is a modification, a spark is a modification of fire. A spark is a product of fire. That which is a modification or a product is mithya. So, that's why he says nowhere in the scriptures does it say that consciousness is a modification or product of Brahman. Mana adi vikara vilakshinatam pratiyanti. Sharira bhritaha tu tataha, therefore, pratiyanti, they say, the scriptures say, people understand. What do they understand? Sharira bhritaha, the bearer of the body, embodied consciousness, mana adi vikara vilakshinatam, consciousness is utterly unlike vilakshana, utterly unlike vikaras, modifications, like mana, etc., like the mind, etc. Consciousness is utterly unlike anything created from the, including the mind and including everything in the cosmos. All of it is a product of Brahman. All of it is a modification of Brahman. Unlike consciousness, which is not a part of Brahman, not a reflection of Brahman. There's no relationship of part and whole. There's no relationship of original, of reflected image and original image. There's the relationship between Atma and Brahman is one of absolute identity. And that distinguishes Advaita Vedanta as being quite different, again, from Vishishta Advaita and Dvaita Vedanta. Would hold different points. Now, this is really a very important teaching in terms of our own sadhana. When we try to understand the nature of consciousness, the Mahavakya reveals that your consciousness is utterly non-different from Brahman, which means having no qualities, having no changes, having no boundaries or edge or limitation of any kind whatsoever. This is necessary to understand, to discover the fullness and completeness of your true nature. And that's what the Mahavakya leads you to understand. We've discussed before. We all know, you don't need Vedanta to know that you are a conscious being. That is self-evident. But the nature of that consciousness is so badly misunderstood. And that's why we turn to the teachings of Vedanta, not to know that we are conscious beings, but rather to know the nature of that consciousness. And that's what's being said here. Good place to stop. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramayah, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Satkamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityor Ma Hamritangamaya. Om Shanti 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 Om. That's it. Very good. Mention quickly, because of Thanksgiving, there'll be no classes Wednesday and Thursday, tomorrow and Thursday. Our classes will resume on Saturday. See you soon. Good night. Anjana, yes, I assumed. And welcome to you.